Hey, in the Pensacola Morning News.
We have Jimmy Patronis, our congressman from Florida District 1, Northwest Florida's congressman. Jimmy, welcome back, sir. Good to have you.
Hey, Andrew. Great to be with you.
We had two fairly significant passings here locally last week. One was the founder, co-owner of the Florabama, Pat McClellan, who I think was one of your friends.
They broke the mold when they made that guy.
Andrew McKay in the Pensacola Morning News. Listen weekdays 5 to 9 a.m. News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay in the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Tonight it's very clear as we're both lying here. There's so many things I want to say.
Speakers are asked to refrain from abusive or profane remarks, disruptive outburst.
See, come that's on. The problem. Your forked tongue gets you in trouble. Just like,
no,
you
it make does not.
If you don't know who I am, close your mouth. Something's going to fly in your mouth.
You're going to have to be quiet when I'm talking. I'm sorry. I'm not going to do the insubordination.
This is not transparent, open government.
I have never said you were psychotic, though you may be.
I don't know that I care for the narrative.
Well, Stephen, I certainly didn't mean to hurt your feelings or anybody else's, or to imply that any one of us is not doing what...
I'm not a maiden who needs to be saved from my feelings.
Wonderful, thank you.
Love can touch us one time and last for a lifetime.
I do trust Melissa, and I do trust Chad, too. However, I also know that I had some questions. I got questions about it, too. The flexibility they want. I talked with them again, I guess it was earlier this week or last week, in their office. We talked more about it. I've talked to the DPZ design code architect about it. And in her opinion, none of the changes alone are a problem. It's all of the changes at once. So I have a problem with that, too.
So at the Thursday meeting of the Escambia County Commission, we'd previously been talking about the budget meeting in the morning, which was its own special monster. The evening meeting was at least as interesting, if for different reasons. And in this particular case, the agenda item was to allow the meeting to allow the changes for OLF 8, and actually not even to allow the changes, but to schedule the public hearing for August 6th meeting in order to talk about approving the changes requested for OLF 8. This was from the planning meeting, the 7-hour planning meeting, where, you know, Chad Henderson and the Tri-W group came forward and they said, we need these changes, we need these, you know, future land use changes, we need the zoning changes. This is all about, are you going to change the entire property or are you going to change a portion of it? And remember, Jonathan Owens was the one no vote on this stuff, 4-1. And then afterwards, at least one, they say two, but I only remember one. They may be right, I could be wrong. That one or two planning board members actually expressed regret over voting yes. So Steve Schroberger, who's District 1, that's his area, Beulah. That's not the only part of District 1, but that's in his district. He's like, I talked with Chad and Melissa, and I've also talked with DPZ, and they say any individual one of these changes might be fine. It's the collective totality of all of it. And so what he wants to do is, instead of having a public hearing scheduled for the 6th, he wants to just immediately send it right back to the planning board to have them take another crack at it.
And I know that there were a couple of... folks on the planning board that regretted their vote. There were at least two that were interviewed that regretted their vote. So I think it needs to go back to the planning board for their approval. So, and not just go back to the planning board. I think I'm going to request that they look at each change line by line and explain and have the developer explain why each change is requested.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's an unfair way of requesting the analysis. Is, you know, the planning board in the end kind of votes on the totality of the request. Each one should kind of get its own analysis. Maybe each one should get its vote. Maybe planning board members agree with 3 and not 5 and 7, you know, something like that. That makes sense to me. But that's not the real issue. I mean, that's an issue. That's a question. That's one thing to look at. The real issue is, but you're not here to talk about the merits of the proposal. The planning board has in fact ruled. They have in fact voted. It is in front of the commission not to discuss, but just to schedule a hearing. And the scheduling of the hearing is always kind of an odd moment in local government, because scheduling a hearing, you're not really there to talk about the issues. You're just there to, like, hey, here's the formality. We're going to put this on the agenda, and here we're letting the public know. But what happens is people who are passionate about the issue want to talk about the issue when the only real issue in front of the board is the scheduling of the hearing about the issue. You follow? And so we wind up doing this all wrong and getting into a big conversation about the substance of the matter instead of what it should have been, is just a pro forma of, you know, all right, 5-0, we're going to schedule a hearing and then come back and talk to us August 6th. I don't know why we do it this way. It doesn't make any sense to me. It might be required by law, but I doubt it. It seems like this is a habit, and it just seems like a dumb habit, because all that ever happens is the people want to talk about the issue, and the commissioners usually have to explain to them that this is just scheduling a hearing. Anyway, it's just a weird process. So Allison Rogers is going to say, this county attorney, she's going to say, what are you doing? Commissioner, you know better. What this is just scheduling the hearing. Also, the other side's not even here, and you're going to make a ruling about their future and the future of this proposal without them being here?
If I can, I'm sorry, board. In fairness to the buyer, they're not here, because all you're supposed to be doing tonight is scheduling these public hearings for August.
But it can 6th. Still go back to the planning board.
That is a vote that I highly recommend you not take until the actual scheduled public hearing time. I would highly recommend you
but
not do a vote.
We're
to do
also
that.
Talking about a time crunch, right?
Yeah, that's.
That's why I think we should probably send it there now.
So, Allison, I want to say what we're trying to do is schedule the public hearing so we can ask these questions in a public forum.
Correct. And okay. The buyer can be here to represent their perspective. And you've got other issues going on. These are not all OLFP.
But what's the legal position, Allison? Can he send it back legally? It's black or white. Can he send it back legally? Or can he not send it back?
So, it helps to know specifically which planning layer you're talking about, but legally they can all be remanded back to the planning board, but I would recommend you only do that as a vote of the board at the actual public hearing for that item.
So she's told him twice already in just that one little 1 minute sound, but she told him twice, I don't recommend you do this now. I recommend you go through to the public hearing. Then everybody can be heard. Then you can decide to remand it back to the planning board if you want to at that point. Don't do it now. Why? Because it creates legal jeopardy if there's ever a lawsuit about this because you didn't follow your process. Plus, it's rude. You're going to make a substantive vote to change the process when you haven't even invited the people to come have their presentation, to have their side. And that's, I mean, it's wrong, let alone it opens you up to legal jeopardy. That's why she's saying, I mean, you have the power to do it, but it's a bad use of power. And so Lumen just, why can't we just do it?
Madam Chair.
I mean, I think what Steve, can he legally do it tonight? And if you're saying he can't
my
do it
legally
tonight.
My recommendation to you is to do it at the public hearing on August the 6th when they're actually here to represent their side.
Is this a...
That is what the planning board did. It forwarded it to the board for consideration. All you're supposed to be doing tonight is scheduling the public hearing so that these issues can be discussed at the public hearing. That's the point of the public hearing.
Madam Chair, we overturn stuff all the time with TDT and...
Yeah, the whole reason that you've got a lawyer in the room is to advise you on the law. In this case, she's told you it's not illegal, but it's inadvisable because you open yourself up to legal jeopardy if you do it what you're talking about. Just go through the process. Wait till August 6th.
We discussed that for the buyer, Chad Henderson and Mr. Wilson, the time frame could put the county at risk. So if what Commissioner Stroberger is saying, why wouldn't we send it back if there's concerns earlier to try to get it right? And that's the only thing. Now, look, if she says we could still do that with the public hearing and have the time so that we don't, I guess that's what I need to know.
Is there even a planning board meeting between now and the public hearing?
Great question. That you can also meet the notice deadlines for, and the answer is no, there's not between now and August 6th. Like, they're trying to do this in the course of 2 weeks. It's impossible what they're trying to accomplish.
I don't think so.
No.
Okay, so then it doesn't make a difference.
Right. This is all a moot conversation.
And I am very concerned about this not being in good faith, considering I'm under the impression that they didn't think they needed to be here tonight,
right,
and we're questioning a contract.
The whole point of the public hearing is for you guys to vet the very issues that you're bringing up. So my recommendation to you
again
is to vet these issues at the actual advertised public public hearing date and time, and you would then be able to remand the appropriate items back to the planning board if that discussion warranted it at that time.
So third or fourth time now she's actually said this to them. Don't do this, Loom and May.
Here's the reality for me. We got to get out the development business. We should sell that land we are not set up to be in the business of development. We can't. I mean, because you can't have five people or all this and have a successful development. I mean, we should, quite frankly, my opinion, sell the land, get from underneath it, and let people develop it, because that's what they do every day.
Okay, fair. But, you know, could have thought of that like 12 years ago. You know? So could have just listened to people like me who've been saying that all along with all of these different projects, like get out of this business, let developers do what they're. Of course, the problem with that is if you leave it up to the developers, just sell the land, let them do what they're going to do. What are they going to do? Well, they're going to put a bunch of houses on there and they're going to make a bunch of money, and it's going to ruin traffic. It's going to destroy the vision of that land. It's going to fail to accomplish the purpose of job creation. Oh, and by the way, if we pass the property tax referendum in the fall, it's going to mean we don't even make any money off of the property, at least not very much, because guess what? A bunch of houses with a $250,000 homestead exemption means HUD. You don't make any money off of it as a county.
At some point, get out of this development business. We're not developers. I mean, we're just not.
I love the cheers from the crowd who are primarily there for, like, the data center terror. They're afraid that OLF-8 is going to become the new home of data centers. That's the group that's there. And so what they hear is, let's get out of the development business, when what's actually being said is, let's let somebody else decide how to develop it, which could be anything. Not anything, but, you know, it's funny that they cheer about that. But anyway.
We're not developers. True, we are not developers. But we've been asked to oversee this development. And that means protecting that property so it has the vision that Beulah residents have been looking for. So
I agree with you. I agree with you. Well, put the restrictions on it. Put the restrictions on it and sell it and get out. I mean, we've done this for almost, Steve and I have done this for 10 years almost.
Yeah, talk to me about Community Maritime Park, right? I mean, like, you know, we understand, although that maybe, and I'm hesitant, but that may be on the verge of actually happening right now. Anyway, Ashley Hoffberger.
So
by the way, there were also some residents there who were not there primarily for data centers. They were there for the ongoing OLF-8 stuff, and I don't want to make it seem like it's all the data center people. That's incorrect.
So my other concern is, if we send it back tonight, we haven't had the opportunity to ask the buyer for clarifications on things we don't understand. So we're sending it back without having those conversations.
I don't want to send it back because I don't understand. I want to send it back because the planning board was unsure of their vote. So we should send it back.
I don't think he's wrong about that. But again, you don't make that decision tonight. You make that decision at the actual hearing. And second, it's a weird thing for a board to make a vote and then for you to interpret based on media reports or even their comments after the fact that they want to revise their vote. You know, you make a vote, you make a vote. Unless the planning board has sent some notice to the county to say, you know, we want to have another meeting because we want a do-over, which they have not. I mean, if they did, it'd be interesting, but, you know, they haven't actually done that.
We in my opinion, we Stephen can't Barry. Send it back tonight. You need to schedule a public hearing. If you want to send it back at the public hearing, send it back at the public hearing. Right now, this is the item's not on the agenda. The item on the agenda is scheduling a public hearing.
Yep.
That's not the same thing. We've only heard Madam Chair can manage the audience, but so we
the audience was out of control. It's weird to me how many people cannot just keep their mouths shut during these hearings. But anyway.
Haven't heard. They did spend 7 or 8 hours at the planning board. I presume that the applicant has information that they would like to present. There's another side to the discussion. No matter whether that side is here this evening or not, the item on the agenda was to schedule a public hearing. If at the public hearing we decide to remand it back to the planning board for X, Y, or Z issues, okay. But that's the appropriate setting to do it, not this evening.
It's not often that I get to say Stephen Barry is 100% right, but Stephen Barry is 100% right. And he and Ashley Hoffberger seem to be the only ones who are actually listening to the attorney. And that's the process. This is just scheduling a hearing. We did this for 70 minutes. We did this nonsense for 70 minutes. What did they decide? I'll tell you later on in the show. 524 here. No, you know, in the end, you know what's funny? They decided to go ahead and move it to the August 6th hearing. And then their expectation is to then send it back. So they've like preordained, basically. They pre-promise it. Their vote at the hearing on the 6th is to send it back to the planning board, but they are going to at least go through the process. But it took 70 minutes to get them to what is the most obvious thing to do and the right thing to do, and it avoids legal jeopardy. And they were told from the get-go by the lawyer what to do. And just I mean, Ashley Hoffberger and Stephen Barry had this right. Steve Stroberger was and Lumen May completely wrong. Mike Kohler, I'm not quite sure. He was kind of little in different places on this. But anyway, so it wound up in the end being the right result. But why does it take 70 minutes to get there? It's crazy. 525 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
This is a special alert to all Americans who own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles with an auto warranty about to expire or with no warranty coverage at all. Due to a decline in the economy, CarShield is announcing a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that is now available to the public to save any driver out-of-pocket expenses on future auto repairs. Call now to find out how you can pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Yes, you heard that correctly. Pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. An open phone line has been established for all drivers to call for a free quick quote. Call 800-478-6430 now. Drivers who are covered will not have to pay for covered repairs again. This protection plan is at an all-time low. Additionally, drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Call us for your free quick quote today. 800-478-6430. That's 800-478-6430. What do you have to lose? Call 800-478-6430. Again, 800-478-6430. 6430.
As Florida parents, we have a choice about where our children receive their education. I'm a mom of four, and I've chosen Santa Rosa County Public Schools for my family. That's why I'm running for school board. I have a vested interest in making sure our children receive a quality education. I'll be your advocate in our community, promoting transparency, fiscal responsibility, and a brighter future for every student. I'm Jill Broxton-Teston. I'll be honored to earn your vote.
Paid for by the campaign to elect Jill Broxton-Teston for Santa Rosa County School Board.
This is a statement from the National Weather Service.
September 2020.
The National Hurricane Center predicted Hurricane Sally would come ashore in Mississippi.
A hurricane warning has now been issued.
But then Sally made a right turn and surprised us by coming ashore here with a destructive power we have not seen since Hurricane Ivan, which is why you should keep your radio on News Radio 92.3 for all the latest watches, warnings, and full team coverage should the storm make that unexpected change of course. News Radio 92.3.
Join Stephen Schmidt, Marine Service Technology Instructor at Georgetown Technical College on the Pensacola Expert Panel tomorrow at 10 a.m. Key Marine Center is sponsoring the show. When Key Marine needs to hire Marine Service Technicians, they hire students from Georgetown Technical College. It's a dream team, so join them tomorrow at 10 a.m. on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Local talk during your morning and afternoon drive. Local news every hour. On News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
I was really impressed the way you handled that stallion. You know, when I saw you dig your heels into his sides, tighten up the reins, and break his spirit, I never wanted to be a horse so much in my life.
News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. I saw this story, and it just made me laugh. Have you seen the story about the marmot researchers, PJ? No? Okay.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, so there's this group of researchers that have been studying this particular group of marmots for a long time. Like 60 years, I think, is the number. It's a really, really long time. More than 60 years. UCLA has been studying a colony of yellow-bellied marmots, my favorite kind of marmot, Colorado's Rocky Mountains near Crested Butte. It's a long-running study tracking their social behavior, climate, how they interact with other populations. You know, actually, multiple generations of scientists have built careers studying these, you know, the marmots, right? Who are cute little rodents.
Squirrels, actually.
Yeah. Okay. The marmots are squirrels?
According to this.
I don't think that's quite true, but okay. And then the funding went away. Federal research grants have gone away under Trump. right? Because they've cut a lot of funding.
Mm-hmm.
So the Marmot team is now trying to figure out, what do we do? And also, they already had like 100 marmots died this year over the winter because it was a rough winter, out of, you know, which is the second largest die-off, they call it. So the funding goes away. They had a bunch of marmots die, and now they're making a decision. How do we get money? OnlyFans.
Oh, my gosh.
That's serious? Now, it's not going to be like marmot paw pics or anything like that, but it's going to be G-rated content. Marmots playing, being cute, digging, whatever. And when they're fighting, it's PG content. The state of the funding is so bad that we're turning to OnlyFans, but as they like to call it, only marms.
Oh, my God.
Only marms. And the researchers are correct. Why, we shouldn't have to make an OnlyFans account for our marmots to get funding. And I think, well, why not? I mean, the people who want to see it can pay to support it.
Fox News, I'm CJ Papa. President Trump delivers on his promise with major strikes inside Iran.
U.S. forces unleashed heavy airstrikes against the regime. Dozens of targets were hit, including IRGC, military command centers, drone and missile facilities inside of Iran, along with remaining maritime capabilities.
Fox's Trey Inks in Tel Aviv, former COVID point person, Dr. Anthony Fauci.
I will invoke my right under the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution to refrain from answering your questions.
President Biden granted Fauci a preemptive pardon before leaving office, but the pardon only covers what happened before 2025, meaning Fauci could face charges for any perjury committed on Wednesday.
Fox's Mendel Rivera on Wall Street, the Dow looking to rebound, coming off its worst drop since April of 2025. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 531 at News Radio 92.3. Off to a warm start this morning. We've got 83 degrees right now with mostly cloudy skies, and we will get a look at our forecast from Channel 3. That's up in just a few minutes. Well, the Atlantic has stayed unusually quiet as we head into the peak of hurricane season. Forecasters are pointing to Saharan dust, stronger wind shear from El Nino, and cooler than normal ocean temperatures as reasons that tropical development has been suppressed so far. Long-range models don't show a lot of activity through early August, but forecasters do caution El Nino seasons often pick up later on, and it only takes one storm to make an impact. Well, a former Pensacola High School assistant principal has been sentenced to 14 years in prison for child pornography and video voyeurism. 57-year-old Sean Roby was accused of secretly filming a nude 17-year-old girl in her bedroom back in 2019. Investigators later found dozens of additional charges tied to items found on his laptop. Roby will also serve 3 years of probation and register as a sex offender. Roby resigned from the school district shortly after his initial arrest. The owner of Tensley Grain in Walnut Hills says the business will rebuild after a fire destroyed its office and its feed warehouse on Tuesday. Nobody was hurt, but firefighters were able to save a nearby building during the fire, which was believed to be an electrical fire. Owner Gretchen Wiggins says operations should resume soon for bulk grain sales. That's pending an inspection of their scale system. Workers say the store has served local farmers for several generations and isn't going anywhere. Well, Tropical Storm Bertha reportedly wiped out more than half of the sea turtle nests along Escambia County beaches. Pensacola Beach dropped from 26 loggerhead nests to only 9. Perdido Key fell from 14 to 7. Volunteers say state rules prevent moving nests unless they're within 10 feet of the previous high tide line, leaving not a whole lot of room to intervene during storms. The FWC says the turtles' natural nesting strategy does account for storm losses, since females lay multiple nests each season. Some hatchlings found after the storm were taken to the Gulfarium to recover before being released. A Pace toddler survived near drowning thanks to her father's quick CPR and a nearby emergency room. According to the News Journal, 4-year-old Bailey Vaughn slipped into her grandparents' pool back in June and stopped breathing before her father ran her to the recently opened Ascension Sacred Heart ER just up the road. Doctors say the fast response made all the difference since every minute without oxygen matters. Bailey, who was born with a rare diaphragm condition, was treated and released within days. It is 5:35 here at News Radio 92.3. And let's check in with Channel 3 to get a look at our Thursday morning weather forecast.
We are going to be dealing with about a 50% chance of those showers and thunderstorms today. Otherwise, looking at some hot weather with a heat advisory in place with heat index values up to 110. Temperatures near 93 degrees for your overall high. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 79. For Friday, 70% chance of those showers and thunderstorms, high near 89 degrees. Friday night, temperatures dropping near 80 degrees. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
It's 83 degrees, partly cloudy skies. Our next news at 6, breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
Nicole Murray with your money now. Samsung Electronics extended its record run with second quarter operating profit topping analyst estimates as robust artificial intelligence demand continues to drive growth in its memory chip business. The tech giant posted a record quarterly operating profit up more than 1,800% year on year, while revenue rose 130%. Microsoft shares rose 8% after the software maker disclosed strong fiscal fourth quarter revenue and called for steady 2026 capital expenditures. Microsoft beat on the top line and saw a gain from its Anthropic stake. The company issued healthy quarterly guidance and capital spending plans for 2026 are unchanged. Qualcomm reported fiscal third quarter earnings that were in line with analyst expectations, but it provided light guidance for current quarter earnings on in-line revenue, blaming the ongoing supply crunch for computer parts. Qualcomm added that it expects adjusted earnings per share to be between $2.05 and $2.25. Futures are higher this morning. That's your money now.
You know what you want to do in retirement, but do you know how to get there? Tune in to What Your Money Would Say with Andrew McNair of Swan Capital, Saturdays at 1 to get answers to your retirement planning questions. Plan today so you can do all the things you've dreamt about doing in retirement. Don't miss What Your Money Would Say with Andrew McNair, Saturdays at 1. Firm offers insurance services, advisory services offered through Swan Capital, LLC.
Here's what's happening around Pensacola this week. Friday night from 5:30 to 8:30, join your friends and neighbors at Bands on the Bayou at Bayview Park in East Hill. Bring a chair or blanket and enjoy live music from the Bay Kings Band. Saturday night, it's Pensacola Unplugged, songwriter showcase at Studer Community Institute. It's an evening of acoustic performances from highly talented local songwriters. See Pensacola Unplugged on Instagram for more. Submit your events at newsradio923.com.
Planning your vacation?
Chris, what do you want to go on a vacation?
Why not take Pensacola right now with Chris and Austin with you?
We're going to go to the beach.
No, take News Radio along via the app.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Just go to your app store, search News Radio 92.3, download the app.
That's good.
And listen to Pensacola's news leader with crystal clarity wherever you go. And it's absolutely free.
That's really good.
Get it now and tap the app to get News Radio 92.3 no matter where in the world you are.
You know, the day destroys the night, night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide, break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side, yeah.
Good morning, I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News, and joining us now we have Cliff Collins. He is the Associate Pensacola City Administrator. He's one of two. Amy Miller is the other one. He is a retired 06, retired captain from the Navy, was worked at the Naval Education Training Command previously, and want to let you know that this interview is brought to you by Lambert Transfer and Storage. Choose the team with a legacy. Lambert Moving Systems. Visit GoLambertTeam.com. And I believe this is Cliff's first time on the radio with me, so it's a first of. I love that, Cliff. Retired Captain Collins, welcome to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Thank you, and I appreciate this opportunity to chat with you this morning. This is, in fact, my first time being on air with you.
Oh, nice. Excellent. Okay, so I know DC is on vacation this week, so Shannon Nicholson had offered you, and I thought, that's great. Let's talk about some stuff. You oversee a lot of things, economic development, facilities, public works, child care access, and, you know, various and sundries. You know, if nobody else has it, you have it, is my impression. So one thing I want to talk about that has not been in the news a lot lately, but I know I have keep asking questions. The Chappie James Monument. I keep hearing things, but where are we at? What is the city's level of involvement? What do we know? What can you tell people?
Yeah, I think the last position I know the mayor had sort of amplified was that, you know, we were really sort of waiting on the foundation. Obviously, I think everybody's aware that the foundation was supposed to raise some money, and that money was supposed to go towards taking an F-4 aircraft, a version of the aircraft that Chappie James flew while he was on active duty, and then sort of display that in Pensacola for people to see and to recognize, you know, Chappie James' accomplishment. He's a hometown young man, and we thought that was fitting. As far as the discussions go right now, I think we're kind of at an impasse, at least from what I understand, as it relates to sort of moving forward with the foundation piece. But then, you know, we also got the other portion of that, which is the city has taken custody of the F-4 aircraft, which is currently housed at Naval Air Station Pensacola. And we take good care of that aircraft, and, you know, really just trying to figure out where do we at least maybe find a place for the aircraft if this monument does not come to fruition. I hope I answered your question.
Yeah. So, and I had heard some of the rumblings about, you know, a lot of turmoil at the foundation, and, you know, board members resigning and various things, and, you know, I don't know a lot, and I wish I did, but it sounds like, so the city owns the Phantom, which is being housed at the museum, and they're taking care of it for now, but you, like all the rest of us, want to see it on display somewhere. We don't want to just pay to have something at the museum. You know, there had been the discussion about the flag, about the pedestal for the aircraft, and then also the statue of Chappie James, and the location, of course, which is city property, and I know there have been a lot of navigation around who's going to be responsible for what and who's going to be financially responsible for what. What I hear you saying is, now that you're kind of, you know, overseeing this part from the city's perspective, is you want to see it get done. How it gets done is a little bit up in the air, but you want to see something happen so that we can all enjoy that aircraft.
That's exactly right. And last week I had a conversation with CJ. I think his last name is Johnson. CJ runs the museum. Both him and I were just trying to figure out, you know, what's ground truth today. And then I was going to reach out to, I think it's Chris Doucette.
Doseph, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Doseph. I was going to reach out to Chris Doseph as well. And this is an effort to sort of at least understand all three parts of it. That's including the Aviation Museum and the aircraft training facility, and make sure I understand all three of those, and then figure out, you know, what levers I have, what can we move, and how do we bring this thing forward? Because I'll tell you, from DC's position, he really wants to get this thing moving and make sure that we at least do what we told the people we were going to do.
Outstanding. Hey, just a technical question, because he piqued my interest. It was always my understanding that the museum is the owner of naval planes, and that the people who have them, like, for example, in the welcome centers or wherever, that they are owned by the museum, and they're just there on basically loan. The way you said it is that the city has possession of the Phantom, which, of course, is an Air Force airframe originally. Who owns it? Am I misunderstanding something?
No, that's a nice distinction. So the Air Force Aviation Museum actually owns the Chappie James aircraft.
Got
and
it.
It's on loan to the city of Pensacola, and that requires us to basically just make sure that we maintain the aircraft.
Okay, so you're the stewards of it, and it's owned by the Air Force Museum, not the Naval, which of course makes sense. That's what I was curious about, the way you'd said it. Okay, perfect. Well, I'm totally with you. I want to see this thing happen. You are also overseeing the graffiti bridge redesign, boat ramp, walk around, warning sign, all of the above, I think. Where are we at on how soon we're likely to get that actual warning system in place?
Well, actually, I can't help but chuckle when you mentioned the graffiti bridge because of all the things that surround it. But what I will tell you right now is the city, we have basically executed a contract with Loftus Marine, and I think that's a great thing. The why for this, which you just alluded to, it is the issue that we keep having with crashes, and I'll get to that in a bit. But to your point and question, is the construction is scheduled to begin in September, so that's less than 2 months, really, at least the way I see it. Now, when all this happens, I think what is the community to expect, right? So obviously you got the boat ramp, you got the parking area, all that's going to be secured. And we're going to basically lock that area down. And really, we're going to put in a modern system, which is really a heads-up display system to alert trucks that, you know, they exceed the limit for the bridge, which it's interesting that we have to do this, but it's important because safety matters. And as you know, at one point, we recently lowered the limit from 10 feet, 8 inches to 10 feet in an effort to maybe get people's attention, but that didn't work. So we think this is going to help.
Hey, it's a good try. It's especially given the way the geometry of a curved surface versus a flat surface. I mean, I understand why that would be useful, especially for a long truck. The longer the truck is going under there, the less you can count on the vertical height at the bridge. It becomes more a matter of the combination of that height and the road contours. So I think that was a smart idea. Still didn't manage to do it, though, right? So
no, not at all. And obviously, I drive by the Graffiti Bridge quite a bit, and I love it. I love that it's a local canvas, but I think this should help us because we really need people to stop trying to basically paint the bridge using the rooftops of their rental trucks, and hopefully this laser system will fix that. So that's the plan.
Okay, I know you said it in jest, but now you've given me a whole new idea for how to accomplish a rapid repaint. Cliff, you did say something briefly, and I just want to follow up because I know how people might hear something. When you say lock down the boat ramp, is there going to be a time where, because of the installation of various parts of this, that there will be boat ramp either reduced or no access for a time during construction of either the boardwalk or any other part of this?
Yeah, right now the plan is for the boat ramp and that parking area to be completely closed. And we'll obviously get out some more information to provide all the specifics of how we plan to do it. But yes, that is true.
And do you know a duration and expectation for how long that, because listen, the local fishing community hears that and their antenna are really on alert right now. They're listening to you. That's why I wanted to ask, because I knew they'd care about this. Do we know how long it's planned to be closed?
You know what? I don't have that info right now, and I was reading up everything last night about it, but I will find out and get back with you on that. How about that?
Yeah, sure. Okay, no worries. And do we have a start on that closure date? Is that going to be within September, or is that subsequent?
It's about mid-September. And you know, here's the interesting nuance to this here, because you know how scarce parts are and scarcity is of finding things.
Right.
The company Loftus is basically looking for stuff right now, really to line up everything. So we say mid-September. Mid-September is great, but I mean, at least in my mind, I imagine, man, if they could get the parts they need, maybe get started early, we can get a notification out sooner. And then, you know, just wishful thinking that maybe they could finish this sooner than expected. So that's a wish.
Later and sooner are both options, and we prefer one over the other. We'll take it. Veterans Memorial Park, the bathroom. I know the mayor has been working on this. You know, the foundation's been working on this. Like, everybody's been wanting this for years and years and years. This is part of your domain. What are we looking at right now?
Man, this thing, you just nailed it. A lot of history with this one. I think D.C. came into office. This thing was an issue. And you obviously have had multiple conversations with him, and you know he is constantly driving things, pushing them in the direction of success, and sort of, like he says, do what I told the people I want to do. That's our biggest thing. But yes, we basically now are moving forward, and I look at this sort of as a three-phased approach, and we're going to basically put a permanent climate control, handicap accessible restroom facility in that area. And this is actually going to, at least the next step is going to be pretty quick, because it's going to be August the 13th when it goes to council. I mean, we've been pushing this one hard to get the council. And so once we get council approval, obviously, you know, that's a big deal to get that done. And then once they sign off, fabrication begins. And so the city expects the buildings to be up roughly around 2027, early 2027. And obviously, as it sounds pretty easy, but it's not, because here's the caveat. You know, obviously, we know this is on a federal flood zone. And so the building there, we just can't just simply put a building there, right?
Yeah.
The kicker is the facility has to be specifically, this is weird, it has to be specifically dry flood proof to meet FEMA standards. Now, I think that makes sense, and it's the right thing to do. And so we've met all that, we got all that stuff together, and we got a good budget set up for it. So between install and all the other fees minus ECUA, it's a little over $500,000 to get everything up and running, and we're pretty excited about that.
Just this is a again because my nerd brain asks this sort of a question, but if it's going to be flood resistant to FEMA's standards, does that mean that the actual bathroom floor is going to be elevated off of the surface, and does that necessitate rampage or something? Because if we're talking about, you know, ADA access, obviously for, you know, wheelchair bound veterans is the primary target here. Does that create an additional cost or logistical challenge getting, am I thinking about this the right way?
But what the cost I just gave you, that covers basically everything for installs.
Okay, that takes care of all of it. Okay.
All of that. That takes care of all of it. Yes, it
okay,
does.
Outstanding. And I know you as a veteran, you know, your eyes on this are going to make sure that it's on in the right direction, make sure that it's right in the end anyway as well.
Super excited.
Gregory Street and 14th, the exit from the 3 Mile Bridge coming into the city. This has been an ongoing problem in, you know, crossing traffic, speed of traffic. We've had a couple of fatalities in that area. You're working on with FDOT to get this improved?
Yeah. You know, have you ever played the game Frogger?
Yeah.
So imagine, and I've done this so many times sitting at 14, got to make a left turn. And I just see people just flying across, coming up from across the bridge. And I'm like, man, I don't think I'm ever going to make a turn here. But that's what we're dealing with. That's the level of safety we're trying to work. And obviously, when you talk fatalities, that's some serious stuff. So yes, we are working with FDOT to sort of bring this thing to fruition. And I was talking about this yesterday and was like, man, I think help is on the way. This is a good thing for us. So where are we at right now? FDOT basically just finished doing the analysis of the traffic flow, you know, basically to address the real safety issue, because we need those numbers to help us out. And so as you exit the bridge, that is going to be the focus, and we're going to kind of talk about that here in a little bit. But by the end of August, the traffic engineers will use this data basically to complete what they consider to be a formal study. And this is to determine if the intersection basically needs a stoplight. Mm. This is a formality. That's all it is. But while we wait for that to happen, this is another one for you where I like the three-prong approach. FDOT's taking immediate action right now. And what they're going to do is, the first one is they're going to fix the lane direction. And so they're going to add extra signs and road markings to clearly show drivers which lane they need to be in to get to I-110. Safety, right? The second one is a speed warning. And basically, this is no kidding. They're going to paint 35 miles an hour speed limit sign on the asphalt. And they said, this is going to be big. So you will see this 35 miles per hour. And then the final one, which is a radar sign, which I think people tend to ignore, but they're going to put it up. And it's going to have this digital feedback sign that's going to let people know, slow down, slow down. And that's just the immediate step right now until we get this thing across the finish line.
Well, those are small things, but I think actually putting the speed limit, like any visual clutter for drivers tends to make you drive more cautiously. So interrupting the expectation of driving on an expressway, because, you know, you're coming off a bridge that's built for 70 miles an hour when the speed limit's 45 and nobody drives it, downgrading to 35, changing lanes to get into that right lane to go to I-110. It's a hot mess, okay? It's not a surprise. And then, as you say, people sit at 14th and they're frustrated trying to get onto Gregory. And what they do is, as you know, if you sit longer than about 30 seconds, you start to make more calculations to take a greater risk to get the job done because you're irritated. And all of that combines to unsafety. So, I agree with the visual clutter. I agree with more signage. I agree most people probably ignore it, but a little bit is probably better than nothing. And then long-term solutions, whether that's a light or something else. That's a great, Cliff, great brief, great update on several things that I had questions about. So I appreciate it. Cliff Collins, he is the Associate Pensacola City Administrator. And he overseeing, like I said, economic development, facilities, public works, child center stuff, and other matters. Thank you so much, Captain. I appreciate the time. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right, sir. Thank you. Have a good one.
Absolutely. So 5:53 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. And if I have any one takeaway from that entire interview, PJ, turn my computer on. I lied to you. I had told him in the break, no, you don't need to turn my computer on, but here we go. as opposed to the other sound where the log or the crocodile gets you, which is what we're trying to avoid at 14th Avenue. I'm Andrew McCabe.
As a business owner, you've got a lot on your plate. Managing staff, growing your business, training new hires, and more. With so much going on, you need Avalon. As an IRS-certified PEO, Avalon HR can help. From running your payrolls, remitting state and federal taxes, workers' compensation insurance, employee benefits, and our HR expertise. Avalon HR lets you focus on your core business while we handle the rest. Employing made easy. AvalonHR.com.
It's the Always Sunny Show. When you're ready to throw a barbecue, it's Always Sunny's. Join us tomorrow at 9:30 for the Pensacola Expert Panel with me, Eldon Scott, your host, to hear about barbecue events in the Pensacola community, win some amazing barbecue prizes, and hear how Sunny's Barbecue is helping to build a strong Pensacola. We're spreading the spirit of barbecue far and wide. Make sure to tell Sunny that Eldon sent you.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
What would you give for our babies? What would it take for you to show them how much they're worth? Did you know that thousands of premature babies die every year as a result of not getting their full 9 months? Hi, I'm Heather Headley. Join me and the March of Dimes in the fight to reduce premature births in our communities. Visit marchofdimes.com today. Saving our babies. There's nothing more worth it in the world.
Here are the News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 contest rules. You can win one prize per household per contest in any 30-day period, unless specified by individual contest rules. All prizes on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 are non-transferable, non-redeemable for cash, or exchangeable for any other prize. News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 prizes must be redeemed within a 30-day period of winning. For a complete list of rules, visit newsradio923.com.
Wish someone would just ask the follow-up question?
Hugh Hewitt, weekdays 2 to 4 on News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620.
See if you can guess what I am now. I'm a zit. Get it?
Good morning, 5:57 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. We are at war part two with Iran for several days now. Of course, the attacks intensifying after Iran tried to attack us yesterday. The president says that they were sending hypersonic missiles at us. I'm not sure if this account is accurate or not, but here's what he said.
Five missiles going 8,600 miles an hour, big ones, coming right at us, and all five were shot down.
Yeah, that's a Mach 11, and I don't know. I went to try to research and see if that's actually an allegation that the Iranians are Mach 10 plus capable with their weapons, and most of what I read said that most of the experts are skeptical of that claim. But, you know, President Trump is not particularly good at being reliable about numbers, you know. He says 8,600 miles an hour. It's Mach 11. I'm not sure. But in any case, the ongoing conflict obviously continues to be unsolved. And, you know, after Benjamin Netanyahu and President Trump had a meeting this week, you know, differing accounts of whether there was going to be a productive outcome for this. ABC's Kristen Davis asking Netanyahu about it.
You said just yesterday that you think that a diplomatic solution is unlikely. Why do you think that you all have such different assessments of the outcome here?
Well, I don't know if it's unlikely, but I'm skeptical about Iran's, mode of operandus. I mean, the method of operating. They always lie, they always cheat, and they always play for time. Could that, with sufficient pressure, diplomatic, economic pressure, could that change? Give it a try.
Yeah, and that's accurate. Iran is always lying, cheating, and playing for time. No doubt. I think it's funny that he kind of hybridized English and Latin there for a second and then explained the brand new language that he invented momentarily, but that's okay. So, you know, what all is going to happen in the Middle East? I'll say what I've always said. I don't know. I think the president, you know, wants to think that everything can be solved with you know, strong or unpredictable negotiating tactics backed up by some kind of use of force, it's not obvious that this can be solved that way. And even though we are very good at the things we are doing, it's not obvious, and it's becoming more and more obvious, that our willingness to do only the things that we actually are doing may not be adequate to solve the problem, protect the Strait, keep Iran from being able to do what they want to do. You know, it may take a greater escalation in order to actually accomplish what he wants to accomplish. And the question is whether Americans are down for that. And I don't think they are. I don't think we are. But, you know, like many other things, we'll have to see how this plays out, because so far it has not played out successfully either for, you know, the American taxpayer, for our economy, for gas prices, or for solving the end problem.
You're listening to regime. News Radio 92.3 WNRP, Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.